to KBOO Portland.
Hello and welcome to Words and Pictures. I'm S.W. Konser, and I'm very honored today to be joined in the KBOO studio by Marjane Satrapi, creator of the graphic novels Persepolis and Persepolis 2, which have now been collected into one volume, The Complete Persepolis. The animated feature film version of Persepolis arrives in theaters on January 25th and has already won the Grand Jury Prize at the Cannes Film Festival. Marjane, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much. Thank you for. I'm very thankful to be here too.
Let's talk about Persepolis, your graphic novel, which was first published in France in 2000. It's steadily become an international sensation since then. This is a memoir of sorts. It's a literary as well as visual life story, but it's also a window on a historical moment that many of our listeners will remember: the Iranian Revolution of the 1970s.
Yes, but you know, I never had the pretension, you know, of making a political or, you know, a historical or a sociological statement. That's why I use my own experiences actually to describe the situation. And this is not so much, you know, of an autobiography, because autobiography normally is a book that you make, you know, when you have problem with your family and friends and you don't dare to say to them. You make a book, you know, to solve the problem. I use myself actually a lot, you know, to describe what happened around me. But it stays a very personal point of view. It's extremely subjective, of course, and it's very personal.
Well, it's very intense. And it's interesting, when we first meet the young Marjane, she's part of a very cosmopolitan family living in the modern 1970s city of Tehran. And it seems indistinguishable from so many similar scenes in the West until it's revealed that some of the family members have been imprisoned by the Shah's regime.
Well, you know, I mean, this kind of situation has happened everywhere, you know, that, you know, I came from a family that they were, you know, they were cool and relaxed, and, you know, they were free in their mind. And, you know, I mean, you have this kind of family everywhere, and then you have, you know, other kind of family everywhere too. It's not sufficient to come from Iran that it would be surprising, because, you know, even in America, it's better to be born in a family, an open-minded family, that, you know, than being born, you know, somewhere, you know, in a very fanatic family, because it exists here too. So, yeah.
It seems like a very loving family, and the film moves back and forth in time between the young Marjane and her grown-up self. And by the way, even though this film is based on your personal story, I'm distinguishing you here from the character of Marjane in the film.
Yes, of course.
Well, what we're seeing, of course, is a literary work, not a documentary.
Of course.
So there's plenty of artistic license in the way that you, Marjane, are portrayed.
Well, of course, you're completely right. It's certainly not a documentary about my life. I base myself on my own experiences, but, you know, the part of storytelling should not be forgotten, because, you know, when you make the story, of course, you know, you have to make the story. And even the documentary, it's a big part of storytelling also, even in the documentary. So, but this is far from being a documentary.
Mm. Yes. And, I want to mention, okay, in the film's opening scene, there's a very dramatic moment involving the hijab, the Islamic headscarf. Now, the hijab is not only a divisive symbol in the Middle East, but these days, but it's also causing controversy in your adopted country of France.
Well, you know, my problem with the veil was not was that I had to put it on. You know, otherwise I don't have any problem with veil. I mean, if people, they want to cover their head or, you know, be naked or whatever, I can't care less. I mean, I cannot understand when, for example, if they stop people, if they're naked in the street, they say that it's attacks your morality. I don't know what is immoral about being naked. I mean, you can walk naked. What is bad about that?
You won't get much argument here at KBOO.
No, but I know. But, you know, it's nothing immoral. You know, against morality in the fact of seeing a naked body. For me, it's the same thing. I mean, people, they have to be able to do whatever they want to do. So I was not happy with the veil, because I had to put it on my head. But, you know, I'm not in the head of somebody who wants to put a veil. I don't know the reason. So, you know, making law against that for me is completely absurd in the same way. You know, it's something that is called, the human rights, and people, they have the right, you know, to do whatever they want. Like in France, you know, that was this whole thing that, yes, and now if they have veil, and you know, what is next? Because, you know, then if they go to the hospital, then they would say that we are not going to be operated by a male doctor, etc., etc. But you have some Christian in France that, you know, they won't make a blood transfusion to their kids because against their religion. Do we make law against these people? No. We have to study the case of each person because each case is different. And there are not so many being like that. So making laws like that is stigmatizing this part of the population. And this is not a good idea.
And this is a very current issue right now. And just recently, Nicolas Sarkozy, and for our American listeners, he's an admirer of George W. Bush. He narrowly defeated the socialist Ségolène Royal to become France's new president. And Sarkozy's hardline stance on immigrant issues, immigrant rights, was credited with helping him win the election. How is your adopted country dealing these days with the serious immigrant issues?
Well, the thing is that, you know, my friends, they have not voted for Sarkozy, and they are not Sarkozy lovers. So that's why I can still stay in France. This is about it. Of course, you know, in France, we criticized, you know, America for several years, you know, laughing at them, laughing at George Bush. Then, you know, we laughed at Italy with Berlusconi, and we laughed at Spain with Aznar, and we laughed at England with Blair. And when all these countries, they are getting rid of these people, they already did, or they are on their way to. We elected Sarkozy, which is a big mess, I think, which is a really big mess because, you know, this idea that, you know, the stranger is the one who creates the problem, the stranger is the bad guy, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I'm a foreigner. I am, you know, I have immigrated in France, too. And, you know, with the film that I made, you know, I mean, about 100 French people, they have been hired and they had the salary for 2 years. So, you know. I mean, the immigrant, they are not the one who always take her wife and husband and take her money, and, you know, they're just poor and everything. You know, the real battle, actually, is the battle between the poor and the rich, you know. It's not the battle between Muslim and Christian, et cetera, et cetera. You know, when they tell me, yeah, you have the problem of assimilation and all of that. You know, I come from a middle-class family, you know, wealthy enough, you know, to be able to go, you know, to the trip outside of the country, you know, being in a bilingual school, having access to education and book and movies, etc., etc. So, of course, you know, when I went to Europe, I didn't have any problem of assimilation because of the knowledge. This is different from somebody who comes, you know, as a worker, that they don't have any money. So if they don't have any money, so no access to the culture neither. So then they put them into the suburb. Then, you know, they are far from the rest of the people. Then the assimilation cannot happen. It's not that these people, you know, they are bad, you know. I mean, now we are talking about these Muslim people, like if that is a new category of people. If that was, for example, we talk about them as we used to talk about communists. But, you know, communism happened, you know, in 1917. Muslim people, they exist since 1,400 years on this earth. And suddenly these are the enemies. Certainly because we need an enemy, because, you know, we always need to stigmatize over some people and to say these are the bad people. But there's something extremely dangerous about that. I mean, out of the fact of the condescendency that we can have towards these people, calling them, you know, terrorists, fanatic, etc., etc., is extremely dangerous to put a name and an address on the evil. Because if the evil is somebody, if it's situated in a geographical place, if it's a religion, then we go back to the idea of 1930s, and the result of that, you know, was a disaster. Because if the evil has a name and an address, then let's go and kill all of them. And like that, we, the good people, we will live between each other and the world is going to be good. You know, there is no difference between a Muslim fanatic and a Christian fanatic and a Jewish fanatic and a Buddhist fanatic, you know, and even a secular fanatic, you know. A communist is a secular fanatic, and it's very dangerous too. So the real line to draw is between the fanaticism and the rest, or between the poor and the rich. And if we want to have a better word, maybe we have to start thinking about that and stop saying, yeah, this is these people, these are the bad people, et cetera, et cetera.
But what I hear from my European friends is that the fanaticism is sometimes caused by the divide, by the separation. In Europe, there tend to be separate communities created, ghettos, if you will, for immigrants and their children.
Well, this is exactly what has happened in France. You know, I mean, back in the 60s, you know, after the Algerian War, when Algeria got finally freed and became a country and it was not anymore a colony of France, and that was just after the Second World War. So they invited all these people to come to France and reconstruct the country. Okay, they came and they reconstructed this country. But the problem is that three generations after, the kids of these immigrants that are born in France and their parents that are born in France, they're still considered as Arab. They're not considered as French. So they don't have any recognition of the state for an identity. If they go back to Algeria or to Morocco or to Tunisia, they're still considered as foreigner there because they're French for the Algerian, they're Arab for the French. Okay, so here comes some fanatic and they say, you, my brother, we're all Muslim and blah, blah, blah. Okay, so that is only this way that they can find an identity because they're considered. It's not a question of ideology. It's a question of being considered. If we don't want these people to become fanatics, then we have to consider them. Another problem is the TV. You know, as soon as something happened, like the riot or whatever, you know, there are not so many things that has happened. But they will show you only that. And of course, people, they get scared. They say, oh, this is it. All of them, they are the same. This is not true. I mean, many, many of these kids, you know, they just want to have a decent life. They want to work, etc. I don't say all of them, they are just completely clean and there is no problem on the other side. But when you have a conflict like that, it's to the one who has more power, who say that he's the intelligent one, who say that he's the one who knows to act differently than the other one. If we start, you know, answering to the violence by the violence, to the stupidity by the stupidity, then what is the difference between us and them? So, you know.
Do you think that intellectuals, and this is a theme that you see in the film, do you think that intellectuals sometimes have a problem with naivete when it comes to human nature? When political change starts to get out of control, say during the French Revolution or Germany in the 1930s, Sarajevo more recently, intellectuals tend to be overly optimistic that things will not devolve into chaos or bloodshed. On a lesser scale, when Bush came to power here back in 2000, the left was predicting riots once, say, civil liberties got rolled back, once people were left to die in places like New Orleans, but all that seems a bit naive now. You know, opposition has been muted at best.
Yes, but, you know, we are living in a very conservative time of the world. You know, we have gone back really, you know, 50 years behind. We are living in 1950s in the whole world. We are living under McCarthy. That is what is happening in the world, you know, to the world. And that can be explained by many and many and many of the reasons. But, you know, this is something, you know, to defeat, you know, the darkness of the Middle Ages, what happened is that people, they went back to the ancient Greek and they create the Renaissance, leaning, you know, on this knowledge.
And the Moors, the Islamic societies, helped them do that.
Absolutely. So this is it. So maybe to construct a society of today, we have to go back to the 18th century and the humanism, you know, the century of light. And maybe like that we can have a better society. But certainly the way we are going is not normal, because we are talking about everything but the human being. And it's about time that the human being should be in the center of interest. We don't talk about the human being. We are talking about all the time about groups, about ethnic, about East, about West, North, South, Christian, Muslim. Like if, you know, all the Christian, they were the same people. That was one Christian. Then all the Muslim, they were the same people. You know, the individualism is the basis of democracy. Without a consideration for individual, there is no freedom.
You're listening to Words and Pictures, and we're talking with Marjan Satrapi, creator of the graphic novel Persepolis. The animated version of Persepolis arrives in theaters on January 25th, and it is France's official entry in the Academy Awards race for Best Foreign Language Film. Let's talk a bit about the look of the film, Persepolis. One of the graphic elements of your book, which is very effectively adapted in the film, is the minimal line work. It's a very simple shape for the head, for the hair, a single line for the nose, the mouth. Yeah, some viewers might think that simple line work means it's a cinch to put just the right expression on a character's face, but the opposite is true. It's much harder to draw a single line just so.
Well, you know, is the hardest thing is to make something simple, actually. The more complicated it is, the easier it is. It is like when you direct a movie, when you have to film a hectic moment. It's very easy because, you know, things are happening. So it's very easy to make something that that works. The most difficult thing to do is when you film, you know, the scene of the family, you know, that they're sitting in the living room and they're talking. How to make that be, you know, has lots of energy. Or so this is the same thing, you know, we had to make something simple, because the thing that you were talking about, they were so complicated that if you make it everywhere complicated, that it becomes, it's too much.
Another part of the film that looks amazing, well, I can remember as an animation student in Canada working on the scenery for a film, trying for just the right look for the backgrounds, and my instructor advised me to look through some volumes of Persian art. And there's a flattened perspective in so many of those tapestries and paintings, and it's very recognizable, and it works beautifully in animation. And in Persepolis, several of the scenes, including the opening titles, evoke that classical Persian look.
Yeah, absolutely. We referred ourselves a lot to that. You know, I had lots of books also. We looked a lot, you know, into that. So, of course, yeah, we use it a lot. But, you know, the background, really, that is a result of lots of work, because we didn't want it to make something folkloric and ethnical and orientalist. So we had to find ways of making it be beautiful, and at the same time, it wouldn't completely destroy the whole atmosphere of the story the way it was in the book.
One of the questions you'll hear from a casual film goer as well is, this traditionally drawn animation or computer animation?
But
of course there's a little bit of the computer in every film these days.
Well, the use of the computer is at the end. I mean, when all the animation was made, we put the images, you know, putting, you know, the character on the background, that is what was made by the computer, and the movement of the camera, that was the only thing that was made on the computer.
So you used the traditional artists in their hands.
All of it.
Yes.
All of it. The only thing is that, you know, that is the compositing. That is what you call the compositing. That means that you take the animation, you take the background, you put the animation on the background, and then you simulate the movement of the camera. So that is what was made on the computer. That was the only thing that was made on the computer.
That's a bit alien to American studios these days.
Well, I don't know, you know, we were not in fight, you know, with American studios or against the tri-dimensional, or we didn't like it, etc. But for what we wanted to say, for the kind of picture that we wanted to have, that was impossible to make it by computer. We wanted this trembling, you know, line. We wanted, you know, we wanted the animation look like what it was. So it was impossible to make it otherwise than the way we did it. Another thing is that neither Vincent and I, or I, we are computer people, you know. I mean, I barely know how to write an email, so you imagine. So, you know, you cannot direct a movie and be in a studio and you even don't know what the hell they're doing, you know. I mean, I don't understand what is happening on the computer. But, you know, I have a whole relationship, actually, with the paper and with the ink and the pencil and the razor. All of these things are things that I know. So, you know, I have to direct a movie that I at least understand what is happening. And I understand things that are happening when they're on the paper. You know, if I, for example, they send me an email, just to tell you, I never understand what is written. I always have to print the paper out. If I have it on the paper, then I can read it. Otherwise, I can't.
That sensual quality comes across.
Yes. Yes. Like, you know, I never read a letter that was sent by anybody to me if it's typed. I only read a letter that are handwritten, because, I mean, a typed letter, what is that? It's so, I just cannot read it, you know. A letter should be handwritten, so, yeah, it's a little bit old-fashioned, but it's even not a combat, you know. I just can't make it, you know. It's not me.
Now, this film won the Grand Jury Prize at the Cannes Film Festival, and you're getting Sony Classics to release it here in the U.S., but still,
yes.
Hollywood studios don't seem to know what to do with animated films for adults. And there are some very strong scenes of tragedy and horror in Persepolis.
Well, the problem with animation is, for a long time, it has been considered as a style of movie. Animation is not a style of movie making. Animation is just a technique. This is it. That's the same problem with comics, you know. People, they think that comic means superhero story. They even created the word graphic novel, which I don't like at all, you know, to say that's another kind of comic. That is, you know, that was actually for making the bourgeois less scared, you know, of buying comics and not be ashamed in front of their friends to say that they read comics. No, they were reading graphic novels. But this comes from the problem that people, they have with the drawing, because everybody draw until the age of 10. At the age of 10, you know, 99% of the people, they stop drawing. So for this 99%, the drawing belongs to before the age of 10. So this is the first thing. Then comes also the educational system. Very quickly, we know how to, you know, the author said that, the poet said that, but we don't know how to talk about the drawing. What makes it that the drawing is nice and illustration is good, another one is not good? We don't have the tool. So we reject it completely. So this is the problem that we have with the drawing. And at the same time, drawing is the first language of the human being. Before talking, before writing, human being, they were drawing, you know, to go over their fear. So, you know, in comics, it took a while, but, you know, now people understand that, you know, you can write about serious matter, or at least not for children only things in comics. Probably it will come for animation too, if you just understand that is a technique. I mean, I made a movie. This is it. It happens that instead of, you know, having actors, we draw the characters. But it doesn't mean that you shouldn't care of the acting. You have to care of the acting. And so this is it. This was it.
There is some very funny scenes in the movie that come across just, well, one is in an art class in Tehran where the model is veiled.
Yes.
You know, you expect a model to be unclothed, but this model is shapeless. And there are several allegorical scenes in the film that come across so beautifully. One is there's an awkward conversation between Karl Marx and God, for example.
Yes, you know, these are the things actually that you can only do in animation. I mean, if you want to make it in a movie, you know, there was so many different narration that we had that if you made a movie, it would look like a circus, you know. The animation, especially in black and white, help us to go from one narration to the other one and keeping coherence for the totality of the movie, actually.
Now, something that will spark controversy with viewers. The film pulls no punches in showing the damage done by the Western powers, including the oil companies, the arms merchants, foreign intelligence, in scuttling Iran's attempts at democracy and self-governance. And that's starting with the plot against Mossadegh in the 1950s. Even today, though, you can see a spark of hope. Now, in your opinion, if Iran is just left alone, if the Bush administration doesn't do something drastic, can the young people in Iran eventually defeat the hardliners?
Yes, certainly they can, and certainly they will. But, you know, if you come and you attack Iran, you know, then we have an enemy. Then all these people, they have to be behind the government. That is what is going to happen. So if we want changes, you know, we just have to, you know, you can help the countries within inside. You can help them, you know, to do something. But, you know, democracy is certainly not a gift that you give to people by going and bombing them and killing them. It doesn't happen. Democracy is a cultural change, is a way of being. And each country, they have to make their own way. But, you know, when they say, what can we do? Well, instead of giving money to Al-Qaeda and create Al-Qaeda, and then they go too far, and just to punish them, you go and kill all the innocent people from the beginning. Just don't give money to Al-Qaeda. Just don't create this kind of thing. This is another way of seeing this stuff. I mean, they're all giving us all this whole fuss about, those fanatics. I mean, who gave them the money to become fanatic? You did. Now you are going to kill me for the misdoing that you did. This is crap, you know. This is crap. But this is so much cynicism that it almost makes me feel like throwing up, you know. I mean, it's just they said, you know, we are the most powerful one. We want to come there. You have the 85% of the oil is there. We want to take that because we are the most powerful one. I can take that. You know, this is the way it is, you know. You are more powerful. You come and you kick me out. But, you know, saying that is for your own good and all of that. Come on. Just makes me puke.
And your family is still in Iran. And
yes.
As far as I know, the women in Iran have a great, strong movement. They're bringing about change.
Well, of course. I mean, 70% of the students of Iran, they're girls. 70% of them. 2 students out of 3, you know. And the first thing for a country to have a democracy is that the women and men, they would be equal. Now, the law there against the women, I wouldn't say the contrary. I mean, the women, they don't have a very good situation. But if the emancipation has to happen, it goes through education. And they are educated. They're more educated than their husband and their fathers and their brothers. This gives us hope. So just people, stop this George W. Bush.
Well, Marjan, it's been a great pleasure to have you in the studio this morning. I'm sorry to see you go, but you have many other commitments here in Portland. Thank you so much for joining us today on Words and Pictures. Oh, before we go, how can our listeners find out more about your work?
Well, they have to pay and buy my books and then go to my movie. I don't know. I don't have any website, nothing like that. I told you, I'm not a computer person, so I don't know.
Well, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The animated version of Marjane Satrapi's graphic novel, or as she prefers, comic, Persepolis, won the Grand Jury Prize at the Cannes Film Festival. The film arrives in theaters on January 25th. Special thanks to our engineer this morning, Devin, as well as Dr. Gudars Eghdadari for his invaluable assistance. Gudars is the director of the American-Iranian Friendship Council and host of KBOO's outstanding program, Voices of the Middle East. Thank you, listeners, and stay tuned to your community radio station, KBOO.
هر جا لب جاد کسی به انتظار نشسته بود، هر جا کسی نفس نداشت، محبت پیش و پس نداشت، هر جا دیدی پرنده ای نونه به جز قفص نداشت. به یاد من، به یاد من، به یاد
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Hey, KBOO supporters. This is Cat Meow, KBOO's board president. Due to the COVID-19 crisis, KBOO has had to cancel our annual spring membership drive. Canceling such an important fundraiser was not an easy